Hello, this episode of Recovery is Possible is brought to you by Retreat Behavioral Health, where there are endless possibilities for recovery. Retreat provides quality care at their leading mental health and substance use treatment centers, which are designed to offer patients truly personalized and comprehensive programs that are tailored to their needs. Retreat Substance Use and Mental Health Treatment Centers in Palm Beach County, Florida, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and New Haven, Connecticut do everything in their power to ensure that patients receive the highest quality treatment in a safe and comfortable setting. So reach out today at retreatbehavioralhealth.com or call at 855-802-6600 for more information. And folks, this is Mike Van Meter. I'm the host of Recovery is Possible, and I want to talk to you today about what it takes to get into long-term recovery. What it takes to get into long-term recovery. I get asked that quite a bit. In fact, I was asked that by a patient today, you know, because, you know, in my story, I had about 10 years of trying to get sober. And then, you know, I've got a little over 12 years now sober. And the question was, how did that happen? This guy asked me today, how did you get sober? What changed? What was that all about? And here was really my response to this particular individual. I asked him, I said, what do you think changed? What do you think changed in me? And he said, let me guess, you finally just started doing the program. And that's pretty much what it is. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. It's doing the program. Because if you think about it, when you think of the recovery program itself, and I'm a practitioner of the 12 steps. You know, I understand that there's other programs, but you can apply what I'm saying to the other programs as well. You know, it doesn't have to be the traditional 12-step program that I'm talking about, but any program. But that's what I happen to practice. And, you know, what I said to this individual was that the program has not changed after all these years. You know, the information that I was receiving when I was first introduced to my program did not change at all by the time I got sober. What changed in all of that was me. That's what changed. And my ability to listen, my willingness to listen, my willingness to listen to what other people had to say, take advice from other people, and more importantly, practice the program and actually do the things that are in the program. Because what I have found over the years, particularly working with patients that have relapsed many times, and I sit down and I ask them, you know, about the program, many of them can tell me what it takes to get sober. In fact, you know, I'll make a statement in a meeting and they'll say, oh, that's page 417 of the big book or page 64 of the big book, which means they've read the big book and understand it and have followed it. Or many of them can actually quote the preamble to AA. Again, what that means is they know what it takes to get sober. But I highlighted the problem based on some information I got from another podcast that I was listening to. And about a month ago, I was listening to a podcast. And this podcast was actually about diet and nutrition. And this nutritionist was being interviewed. And I found his responses to this particular interviewer pretty interesting. Or interesting as it relates to recovery, because what he was talking about was very similar to recovery. And even the numbers that he was throwing out, the statistics that he was throwing out, were also very similar to what recovery statistics are. And it went kind of like this. He's being asked, and this is a nutritionist for high-end athletes. And by that, I mean NFL football players and Olympic athletes and people like that. And so he's being interviewed, and the interviewer says to him, hey, is it not true that 95% of all diets don't work? 95% of all diets don't work. And I found his response very interesting. Because in his response, he said, you know, I really don't like the question. He said, I don't like the question, and I don't like how it's phrased, because there's another way of looking at that question. And another way of looking at that question is that 5% of the diets do work. And here was his point. His point was, you're focused on the negative, and I'm focused on the positive. you're interested in trying to demonstrate to me that 95% of all diets work. However, they do work for 5% of the people. And so instead of trying to figure out why people do have success, you're focused on why people don't have success. And that really caught my ear, because again, that 5% is not unlike, you know, recovery programs when you get into long-term recovery, as being defined as 5 years or more of continuous sobriety. That's the medical definition. You know, that it's not entirely different. And he said, you know, the fact is that, you know, when it comes to dieting, it's really not rocket science. Dieting, if you want to lose weight, for example, most of us, if you think about it, really know how to lose weight. I mean, again, it's not that complicated. I don't necessarily need to watch 20 YouTube videos and pay $3,000 to a coach to get the following advice. You know, the following advice is likely going to be watch what you eat, eat clean, sleep properly, hydrate well, work out, you know, take care of yourself, meditate, relax, but put in the work to lose weight. But you're going to have to eat clean, rest, hydrate, and work out. It's really not any more complicated than that. But he said the difference between the 95% that we're talking about and the 5% they get well is that those 5% actually do those things. They don't. It's not just that they know about them intellectually. They do those things. Now, that caught my ear because, you know, in the recovery world, it's the same way. I have found over time that most of the patients that come into treatment, unless it literally is the first time they've ever been to treatment, actually know how to get sober. I'll test them. I'll ask them. I'll say, hey, listen, if you were your own sponsor, if you were sitting in that chair over there talking to you, what would you say to yourself? What advice would you give yourself on how to get sober? And do you know that to a person, they're pretty accurate on what it takes to get sober? So what does that tell me? They know how to get sober. So the question is, why don't they get sober? Well, the answer to that is because they don't do the work. I mean, people come up to me all the time. Hey, Mike, I don't like AA. Why? It doesn't work. And I say, well, yes, actually, it does work. No, it doesn't work. And I go, yes, it actually does work. I'm proof of that. I'm living proof of the fact that it works. And then when I start asking them questions like, well, what's your sponsor's name? Oh, I had this guy. I didn't like him. He was a jerk. So, you know, I stopped going. I didn't have him anymore. Okay, well, did you get a new sponsor? No. How many meetings do you go to a week? Oh, I went a few times. I didn't like it. It was a religious program. And well, it's actually not a religious program. Oh, yes, it is. They talked about God, and this guy was telling me that I needed to join the church. Well, no, nobody's telling you that you need to join the church. It might be that that person found that being in a church and developing a spiritual life that way is what worked for him. But I don't think anybody's telling you to do anything, okay? And they're very insistent upon getting a higher power or a power greater than yourself. That's what they're talking about. Okay, but you decided not to go to any more meetings because that turned you off, because you feel like somebody's trying to sell you on God. And I'll ask, well, what's your favorite chapter in the big book? And if they, a lot of times they'll say, what's the big book? All right, well, that's a clue right there. Or if they have it, they're not actually reading it. So when they tell me that they're working the program, they really aren't, because we think that we're doing things, just like we think we're dieting when really we're not doing the things that really, the things that a diet require. We're not doing those things, but likewise in recovery, we're not actually doing the things in recovery that we need to do. So it's no surprise that they don't have success, but the people that do have success actually do those things. The people that lose weight and get into shape are working out, they're sleeping well, they're hydrating well, they're eating clean, et cetera, et cetera. They're actually doing those things, and they don't take days off from that. And likewise, people in recovery aren't taking days off from recovery. We don't have cheat days. In the recovery world, we do not have cheat days. Every day is your first day. That's why in a program of recovery, we talk about 24 hours. We stay sober today. I don't talk about staying sober the rest of my life or even through next week. I talk about staying sober today. in these 24 hours, because I'm working on today. All effort goes into staying sober today, because that's all I have is today. After all, we don't know if we're going to live tomorrow. We don't know if we're going to wake up tomorrow. We don't know. You don't know if you're going to be alive next year, so don't worry about it. Okay? When it comes to recovery, I'm saying don't worry about it. We're just working on today. But the people that get into long-term recovery inherently understand this, and they do those things that they need to do to stay sober every day, and they are willing to listen, and they're not stubborn, and they don't argue about it. They actually listen to people that have experience, and they take the suggestions from the people that have experience, and they practice that, and they follow through on the advice that's being given to them. I mean, after all, I like to use the analogy. Imagine I'm like the fourth string quarterback on my high school football team, and somehow, some way, Tom Brady calls me up to go live with him for the summer in his mansion down in Tampa. And he can do that because his wife left him, and he's all there by himself, and so he's divorced, and so he's got time. He wants somebody to hang out with, and so he invites me down to be at his mansion, and he's going to teach me everything that he knows about football so I can become the first-string quarterback, maybe even go to college playing football, right? That would be golden, to be able to spend the summer with a guy that has won the Super Bowl as many times as he has. But imagine at the end of the summer, Tom Brady's like, okay, well, good luck. You're going back to school, and I'm sure you're going to have, you've learned a lot this summer, and you're going to be the first string quarterback. And I look at Tom and I say, hey, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate staying here at your mansion. Kind of wish your supermodel wife was still here, but, you know, she left you a while ago, but that's cool. I'll go ahead and I just want to let you know, Tom, I appreciate your time. But I have my own way of doing things. Because after all, I've always done it this way. And I'm going to continue doing it this way. I like to see what you're doing, but I'm going to continue doing this on my own. And anybody watching that conversation would think to themselves, what? That is insane. You're not going to do what Tom Brady suggested that you do? I say, no, I've got my own way of doing things. We all know that that would be insane. Why in the world would we do that? I mean, after all, I just got the best advice you could imagine from somebody that has won the Super Bowl multiple times. And that sounds silly, and it would be silly. But the fact is, in the recovery world, that is exactly the conversation that happens every single day. We have patients that come in, and they tell us, I have my own way of doing things. What has worked for me is this. I have my own program that I'm going to work. On and on and on. You can imagine the things that we hear. And the fact is that if the program that you were working, if it actually worked, you wouldn't be in detox or in a treatment center. And this wouldn't be your multiple treatment center episode. And I'm not being judgmental. Okay? I'm not being judgmental. What I'm saying is, it sounds silly to me that you would come into a treatment center and say that what you have always done worked. You know, one of the things that you want to do when you come into recovery is begin to listen to other people, have an open mind. Some sponsors don't allow you to speak at a meeting for a year until you've gotten some clarity, you've gotten some experience, you've worked the steps, and you have demonstrated that you can put together more than one day of sobriety, okay? And when you've done that, then you're going to want to go back and analyze, well, what is it that I did that worked? And likely what you're going to find is what worked was you were taking the suggestions from other people, and those other people had success, and therefore you had success. But you didn't have success when you were doing your own thing, and that's why you were relapsing and having problems over and over and over. You know, it's important to understand that what we're dealing with in addiction is a disease of the mind and the body. A disease of the mind and the body. And it's as much a disease of the mind as it is the body. And it's the only disease that we are aware of that A, tells you that you don't have it, and B, even when you do admit it, downplays the severity of it. I mean, after all, that's why we talk about being a functional alcoholic. Have you ever heard this? You ever heard people talk about being a functional alcoholic? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And why do people say that? They say that because they're minimizing the severity of the condition, causes and conditions, and they're minimizing the severity of the condition. And when I ask patients, well, why would you say that you're a functional alcoholic? And they'll say, well, I still have a job. It's almost always the job. I notice that it's never like, well, my wife is still with me, or my dog is still with me, or my kids, you know, still talk to me, or whatever the case may be. It's always, I still have a job. That's the standard. That's what the standard that people seem to use. As long as you have a job, in your mind, it's not gotten that bad. Particularly with men. Men seem to have this idea that if you still have a job, then you're not really an alcoholic. But we have to examine that a little bit. Number one, it assumes that our entire lives revolve around our job. Now, if you're one of those people where your entire life does revolve around your job, then that's a pretty sad life. But we want to be a physical being, a spiritual being, an intellectual being. We want to have relationships. We want to do things other than work. I mean, after all, are you working to live or do you live to work? You know, how is it that you view your life? And if all you're doing is working, that's a pretty sad existence. And even if you don't think it's a sad existence for yourself, how about I talk to your family? Let me talk to your spouse. Let me talk to your kids. What do they think? They think that you are not functioning well at all in those areas. You're probably not spending any time with the kids, probably haven't had sexual intimacy in your marriage for quite some time. Certainly not enjoyable for your partner, not the way that you're drinking. You probably aren't doing the hobbies. You're probably not achieving the goals that you once did, the aspirations that had the drive that you had. If you're honest, if you're completely honest with yourself, you'll realize that all of that is true. None of it is happening the way you thought. And your family, if I was to ask them what their number one priority in life is, they will likely say the number one priority is to get him or her sober. It's their priority. It's just not your priority, but it is their priority. And that's a big deal. And that's a real problem. And on this issue of work, and the fact that I'm still working, I still have my job. Nobody at work knows that I drink. Trust me, they know that you're drinking. The fact that they don't say anything to you about it is irrelevant. We live in a society that is inherently conflict averse. I mean, after all, you know, you see these mass shootings that happen, or if you see spies that are captured, you know, in the government. And once that happens and that person's arrested, do you not see people come out of the woodwork? And they say things like, you know, I always knew that that individual was a mess. I knew that they were just a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. I knew it. I knew it was going to happen. I heard about the shooting, and I knew that it was so-and-so because I went to school with them, and they were always a mess. And as soon as I heard on the news, I didn't even need to hear the name. I knew it was going to be that individual. We hear that all the time. And then when the event happens, you know, like I said, people come out and they start saying that they knew this information. It was going to. They knew that it was going to happen. And they didn't say anything prior to that because of this aversion to confrontation that most of us have. And that's how they are with you. The fact that they don't tell you that they notice that you're drinking or you smell like alcohol when you come to work, it doesn't mean they don't notice it. It just means that they didn't say it to you. But trust me, if you get fired or if there's an incident at work, they will come out of the woodwork. Okay? So my point being is that the last person that realizes that we have a problem is us. Everybody else has figured it out a long time ago. But I want to go back to my original question, and is, what is that? What does it take to get sober? What does it take? And the answer to that is, it's going to take surrender. It's going to take a willingness. It's going to take desperation. It's going to take total commitment to recovery. And when you have all those traits in your recovery life, it's still going to be an uphill battle and upwork and work. But I can assure you that if you make it out to a year and a half, and you allow the neural pathways in your brain to heal, the B vitamins in your body to reestablish themselves, serotonin levels, GABA levels, all those levels to come back up in your brain, and you heal, because you've done a tremendous amount of damage to your body and your brain. But when it heals, the obsession at some point will pick up and it will leave. And you will find that it is not that difficult to stay sober once you're going, as long as you don't pick up and start that obsession again. And your life will turn around. Your life won't just be 100% better. Your life will be 1,000% better. And just like the literature tells us, you'll be propelled into a fourth dimension that you didn't even know existed. I promise you of that. But what it is going to take is that fundamental transformation of you, of your soul, of your outlook, that fundamental transformation and a complete outlook, and the realization that your number one priority every single day when you get up is your recovery, and never lose sight of that fact. And that doesn't ever go away, okay? But we do it one day at a time. So you can do this. You can do this, but that's what it takes to get sober, folks. You guys take care of yourselves, and I know that this message is going to be important for many of you out there. And you can use this message to help people across the globe get into sobriety, because it's a great life. And folks, you know, you do have the ability now, if you like this content, help us on Patreon. Go on the website, check that out. You can contribute and help fund this podcast to keep it going so other people can benefit and find that blessed life that the rest of us have found in recovery. So with that, you guys take care, and I will be talking with you soon. Take care. Hey folks, this episode of Recovery is Possible has been brought to you by Retreat Behavioral Health, where there are endless possibilities for recovery. Retreat provides quality care at their leading mental health and substance use treatment centers, which are designed to offer patients truly personalized and comprehensive programs that are tailored to their needs. Retreat Substance Use and Mental Health Treatment Centers in Palm Beach County, Florida, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and New Haven, Connecticut do everything in their power to ensure that patients receive the highest quality treatment in a safe and comfortable setting. So reach out today at retreatbehavioralhealth.com or call at 855-802-6600 for more information.